Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fantie, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm entertainment journalist and editor Travell Anderson.
And I'm the bitch who fucked your bitch and the mother bitch just fucking around with fucking up and Jared Hill. We're so excited to have you joining us.
You know,
you just got to keep things interesting. I want to keep you on your toes and ready to roll. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm into it.
Now, why? I got to be on my toes. I'm not a ballerina.
I mean, you do like a chunky heel. So usually when I see you, you're on your toes. Just to be honest.
I do love a chunky heel, okay? She needs ankle support.
For those of you that saw us on the social media this past weekend. Wait, did you give us a heel this weekend at brunch?
A little wedge.
You gave us a wedge, right. You guys can check our social media. We had a brunch with some friends of the show earlier this week. But first, this is our semi-regular segment where we talk about our therapy and self-care journeys. And we wanted to bring it up this week because of the convo we'll be having a little bit later on in the month. We're going to be having a show on kind of focusing on mental health culture. I think we told you that we'd be doing that. It's going to be a lot of fun. So it's the top of the year, Travell. You got a lot of new things happening. What's happening with your mental health? It's that good, huh?
You know what I'm laughing at, and it's not that.
Peek behind the curtain. I wasn't supposed to read that. Travell was, and I changed my name to Travell's. Carry on.
Let's see what's been going on. Well, so last week after we had recorded our episode, Andre Leon Talley died, who, for those who don't know, is one of my possibility models. And so that was deeply emotional and affecting for me. That was Tuesday night. And then Wednesday was my first day on set of the show that I'm consulting on. And so that was a 11-hour day on set, which, like, my God, have mercy on me. And so, like, last week in particular was a lot. Luckily, you know, I had Miss Jacqueline. We met on, I think, Thursday or Friday, and she shook me right together. It was great, you know, brought me back into consciousness. Oh, I thought I've told him. Miss Jacqueline is my therapist. Is my name of my current therapist. I do have a something I want to say to the people. Now, Miss Jacqueline in our session today told me that one of her clients who she saw before me had told her that I had been talking about her on a podcast.
Hold on.
I don't know which podcast. I don't know if it's this podcast or if it's What a Day podcast. I'm assuming it's What a Day podcast because I just made the assumption that the person is white. But I know we got white people listening to this show too. And we also talk about our therapy journeys. BetterHelp has sponsored the show before. And so, like, I don't know if you are listening right now. Don't do that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some HIPAA privacy concerns about that. We're just going to skate right on by.
It was funny because she was like, I guess she was talking to this person and she was like, how do you know that person is talking about me? And he said, well, they were talking about BetterHelp and they said, Miss Jacqueline, get you together. And so they was like, it's got to be you.
Wow, that's
And it turns out deep. He told her my name and she was like, oh, interesting, you know. And so anyway, but my journey, I feel like I am, you know, back on the up and up. I'm feeling good, in good spirits. You know, if somebody wants to come write this book for me, they can do that. That would help alleviate a lot.
Baby.
But, you know, in the meantime, I'm doing all right. What about you, Jared?
Speaking of writing books, I just sent a text message probably in the last 20 minutes that said, well, rather than writing the book I was supposed to be writing, I did get a lot of other things done that were not on my to-do list. Here's the link, right? Like to some other projects I'm developing.
Not here.
I'm working on, but like I did actually.
Oh, not the OnlyFans link.
I didn't say it wasn't. I just want to, you know. But I did actually have a morning that is going to end up going into my book. Today was one of those moments where I was like, oh, I recognize something has changed, or that I'm doing something a little bit differently. And so it started off kind of having like a difficult morning and then ended up having a pretty good one. Like, it's been a good day. I've been very productive. Again, haven't touched my to-do list of things to get done, but I have, you know, had a pretty solid morning. And I'm not back into therapy yet. I think I mentioned before, like, my therapist and I, we had about a year of work together, and then she just recently left her role, and she's going to do some other things. So I haven't gotten a new therapist yet, but it'll probably be time in a couple of months to just, like, have a little check-in with somebody. Just a hey, you know. And so it'll be almost time for that soon. And so, but yeah, as far as like mental health is concerned, you know, it's been like an up and down kind of, you know, last week since we did this last taping. And I'm feeling okay, but I'm also supposed to be off of social media because social media has been a place that I am just trying to like give myself some breathing room from. So I'm not spending so much time thinking about other people and their shit. And I was doing really, really well. And then I kind of started backsliding. Like this morning, I was laying in bed and like I just opened Twitter and I was like, oh, we're here. We're doing this. Okay. And like sometimes I'll go in and check my messages in the different places, but I'm not supposed to be scrolling and responding and all kinds of other. And like I backslid a little bit. I fell short of the glory.
Well, it's okay that you it's okay that you backslide. I was just about to say, God loves sinners too, Daddy. So, you know, that works for you.
God loves sinners too. I mean, I'll take it.
Somebody out there knows the reference. And if you do, tweet at me. Amen.
Oh,
amen.
I did get a text from someone that's listening, and they told me the next time that I saw you to say, quote, Zetus Lapidus to something that you said that was an inside joke from a previous episode. I feel like you have a lot of inside jokes with the listeners that I don't get. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Because you're old, that's all.
Okay, what you're not going to do.
It's because you're old, that's okay. It's a generational difference.
What you're not going to do. They've already had them.
No, they already
had to bleep me a number of times this morning, this afternoon, whatever time it is. Don't do it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to entertainment journalist Jasmine Simpkins about a story that broke this past weekend that got interestinger and interestinger as it continued on. Fansite's coming right back. So your style is not one size fits all. It's all about what suits your body and what suits the moment. So why not shop at a store that is personalized to your size and style? Stitch Fix Freestyle is a shop built just for you with styles for workouts to wear, for lounging around the house, or for a night out on the town. Stitch Fix Freestyle has clothes for any occasion. Plus, there's no subscription required, and they offer free shipping and exchanges. I just got a cool bomber jacket that I was just wearing over the weekend from Stitch Fix Freestyle. If you don't want to necessarily like commit to a subscription and a whole look, you can go in and find individual things that you'll love and be able to have them delivered right to your door. Also, something that's always important to me is that you can be able to send those things back with a label that's already printed if it doesn't fit or if you don't like it, it wasn't quite exactly what you wanted. Get started today by filling out your style quiz at stitchfix.com/fantie. That's stitchfix.com/fantie to try Stitch Fix Freestyle. stitchfix.com/fantie.
This episode is also brought to you by Wealthfront. A lot of investment apps make it easy to start trading, but just because it's easy to do doesn't mean you know what you're doing. Wealthfront makes it easy to invest and easy to grow your savings with a diversified portfolio that balances your other riskier bets. You can start investing in no time with Wealthfront's classic portfolio or make it your own with things that you care about like socially responsible funds, technology, crypto trusts, or hundreds of other investments. Wealthfront was designed by financial experts to help you turn your good ideas into great investments without the hassle of doing everything yourself. Wealthfront is trusted with over $28 billion in assets, helping nearly 500,000 people build their wealth, and you could be next. To start building your wealth and get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, go to wealthfront.com/fantie. That's wealthfront.com/fantie to start building your wealth. Go to wealthfront.com/fantie to get started today. Hey, y'all, before we get into our Fanti discussion, I just wanted to flag a little pronoun situation. B. Scott, who we will be talking about, uses they, them pronouns. Denver, who is the senior editor at lovebscott.com, uses he, him pronouns. Just in case there's a little confusion, because I was confused during the conversation. But anyway, go on, take a listen. Welcome back, beautiful people. Over the weekend, the entertainment / celebrity news website Love B. Scott published a story about the death of Regina King's son. They were the first site to report it under the headline, quote, exclusive. Regina King's son, Ian Alexander Jr., dead at 26 after apparent suicide. This set off a lot of discourse online, with folks calling out the publication for a number of issues. The thin reporting, as the piece only had a handful of sentences, no attribution regarding their source, and the fact that it was billed as an exclusive. When the editor of lovebscott.com noted on Twitter that these concerns aren't directed at similar sites like a TMZ in the same way, folks felt like the role and responsibility of a Black outlet should be different and not aligned with that of white media. So, as you can imagine, Jared and I have mixed feelings about this as journalists, and we wanted to dive into this conversation on the show for a number of reasons, mainly to ask the question, where do Black blogs / celebrity news sites fit into the broader entertainment news landscape, and should we be holding them to a different standard than their counterparts? So joining us for this discussion is KTLA entertainment reporter, Hip Hollywood host, and film critic, Jasmine Simpkins. Welcome to Fanti.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Yes, definitely. So we're going to take what we like to call our complex and complicado format and approach to this conversation, because there's so much here to delve into. And we should say up front that we did invite representatives from lovebscott.com to join us, and they weren't available. But to get us started, I'd like us to go like point by point with some of the issues that people had with, you know, this report that Love B. Scott did. So the first point that I saw a lot of people expressing was that, you know, the original post only had like four sentences. Actually, the post still, as of yesterday when we were, you know, prepping this, still had 3-4 sentences. And some people felt like because it only had a few sentences that like maybe it wasn't as credible, as trustworthy. When y'all are thinking about, you know, how you figure out what you trust and what you don't trust on the internet, does the length of the reporting and like how many lines it is matter to you all?
It's interesting because this was the first time that that did play a part. Let me just rewind. Mm-hmm. I know B. Scott. I've spent some years sharing and trading stories. You know, some of us at small outlets have mm-hmm. had to do that, right? Like you kind of rely on your contemporaries in the space, Jasmine Brand, Bossip. And so a lot of us who kind of started at the same time, yeah. the YBF, Hip Hollywood, Kevin started in 2010. We were all kind of trading stories and created kind of this family. So I would never turn my nose up to B's story. I know a lot of times he breaks news. What I was a little bit, yeah. what gave me pause, and I'll be very honest, was how brief it was. And I felt for something this huge, they should have taken some time to at least write a little bit more about Ian, take the opportunity mm-hmm. to give us some more information, even if it wasn't about the suicide. Just give people a fuller story, because this may be mm-hmm. someone's first time hearing about her 26-year-old son. And so I felt yeah. like it felt like they were just tossing away or throwing away who he was for an opportunity to be first. And that I thought was a little careless.
Mm-hmm. Jared,
I've said to you since we talked about this on Saturday, I'm kind of all over the place on this one. I mean, there's a moment in this for me where I'm like, I don't like how this feels, right? There should have been more information, but then I also, to be very Fanti about it, right? I'm also like, well, you got to report what you know, right? Like, there's only so much information that you have. But then, kind of to Jasmine's point, it's like, we could, you know, talk more about who Regina is and her, who her son was and all of those things. And so I'm kind of, I hate to be flip-floppy on a thing, but I'm very flip-flop on this one because I feel like the reporting is, I mean, even looking at it right now as of time of recording, it just has that he passed away, details are scarce, we send Regina love, developing story. And I mean, I don't know. My feelings are very mixed.
So I have to say, I personally didn't have a problem with it being thin. Because when I was working at the LA Times and they wanted to get something out fast, they would put up a handful of sentences. Now, we would update the story 10, 15 minutes later, right, with more information. But there was a desire, and I know it sounds kind of seedy and wanting to be first, clickbait-ish, right? But there was a desire to report this stuff first. Because, right, in our industry, clicks is the name of the game. And I feel like there's a balance that we at the LA Times at the time at least tried to do with, like, being first and having something that was a little bit more robust. But this also brings me to one of the second points that people had, which was that there was no attribution of where, you know, lovebscott.com got the information. It just said, you know, we've been told or we heard, you know, that this is the case. And I know that some people had a problem with that as well. Jarrett, you're giving me something on your face.
Well, I mean, the sourcing question is such an interesting one, right? Like, depending on what the story is, depending on who the source is, depending on what the outlet is, the rules are a little bit different. And so, you know, as journalists, like, depending on what outlet you're working at, sometimes, you know, if you're at NBC News, the requirement is you need to have a double confirmation. But if the source was Regina, you probably don't need to have a double source confirmation, right? And then, like, there's anonymous sourcing where, you know, oftentimes the anonymous sourcing comes with a disclaimer that would say the source is a person close to the story who, you know, gave us this information on, you know, the terms of anonymity. But then, like, we also see other outlets that will use another outlet's reporting as its sourcing, right? Which that is not double source reporting, right. Double source confirmation. And I mean, I think we have this conversation around TMZ quite often because TMZ has now more credibility with a lot of people, not all people for sure, but with some people. Following Michael Jackson's death. And as a reminder, Michael Jackson's death was first reported by TMZ and people were not ready to buy it. And I can tell you, I was working at NBC Atlanta, WXIA 11 Alive, and like we were just minutes, I think we were within 10 minutes of going on the air. And the top story of the day was Farrah Fawcett had died. And it was the leading story. And it was like, oh my God, you know, tribute to Farrah Fawcett. And then this headline comes out from TMZ saying Michael Jackson is dead. And it was like, whoa. And I believe that photo was there of the back of the ambulance, like pulling out of the property. Mm-hmm. And it was really jarring 10 minutes to go before going on the air. Our audio engineer was breaking down in tears. Our news team was trying to figure out what to do with this information, whether or not they could report it. TMZ was not a trusted source back then. And so now, you know, TMZ can just throw anything out there nowadays and put exclusive on the graphic and people will take it as true. And so when we think about this situation where there's no attribution, but, you know, looking at the story from lovebscott.com, it just says details are scarce, but sources close to the situation exclusively tell lovebscott.com that Ian died from apparent suicide. His 26th birthday was Wednesday. Now, they don't say how close the source is, but they just say that, you know, that source is close to the situation. Sourcing is a hard thing to figure out. Jasmine's giving me a lot of
things. I got Jasmine, a couple things to say, but I guess I came from, and I don't mean to, when I say I come from real journalism, I just mean that it's a fact. This is not me slamming someone else. I came from real journalism. So like you, Travail, I didn't work at LA Times. I had an internship at LA Times when I was at UCLA. And this story would have never flown there. Even like you said, they would have done a couple of sentences. But before they put that out, guess what they would have done? They would have already called a representative. So at the end of the end of the story, would have said, we've reached out to a representative. No one has gotten back to us at this time before press. Something of that nature would have also gone out. They would have called already reps for this particular person. They would not.
Or the coroner's office.
All of that. They also would not have started it off. Sad news, love muffins. This is not your this is not your regular, hey girl, we got some tea kind of information. This is a renowned Oscar-winning actress who was beloved in the Black community. You have to put some respect on her family and what she went through. And my problem with this type of story, again, I love B. I've he's broken news that we have covered. This felt careless. And if you got it from someone close to Regina, then act like it. Put some love and care into the story. And the first sentence immediately gave me pause. Like, this is just not, you know, you sharing some information with your love muffins. This is, you are now breaking news to the entire world. And so I just feel like as Black bloggers, who are in the space, you've got to learn the craft and do your due diligence, because I think.
Well, so this isn't a.
I just really do feel like this was a very careless piece to put up.
One of the things that you're hitting on, right, is a difference in expectation, I think, that we have as journalists, right, as people who identify as journalists professionally versus the folks who are writing over at alovebscott.com, or even we did a previous episode on The Shade Room, right? And how they go about curating and sourcing their news. There is, for us, there is a difference between, you know, the type of work that we do and the type of work that lovebscott.com does. Again, to your point, Jasmine, no shade, no shot to lovebscott.com, but y'all ain't journalists, okay? And I don't think they identify as journalists, right? And so the question becomes then, to me, is there a world where what they're reporting, because as you mentioned, Jasmine, they have broken news. They have broken, you know, had scoops. A lot of it has been around like celebrity news, Real Housewives of Atlanta tea, etc. And for me, because I had witnessed and am familiar with those scoops, this story, I didn't question the story at all.
I didn't either.
Because I assumed, based on what I knew about how they don't identify as journalists, but they do try to do some sourcing when possible. Like, they have connections, let's say that allows them to get some of this exclusive information. And so I never questioned it, but I do think you make a good point about how the story was written could easily be taken as like no care or, you know, not enough quote unquote respect to, you know, the icon that is Regina King.
So I think that one of the interesting elements of this story, and like, I'll say, like, we don't do a whole lot of explaining for white people on this show, right? But like, one of the things that I do think is important with this particular story is explaining the Black element and the journalism element, right? And so like, Regina King has been a star to us since she was a child on 227, right? A beloved actress, an amazing actress who is celebrated and well awarded and all of the things, right? So she is A-list, not just for Black folks, but definitely for Black folks as well.
Yeah.
The Black element of this is interesting because the three of us are talking about this really just as journalists, right? But then there's an added element of being Black journalists, right? And as, you know, myself, president of NABJLA, Travel, being involved with NABJLA, and all of us having like a Black journalist connection, there is a pride in being a Black journalist that says some kind of version of, we as Black journalists are going to be covering our stories in a way that is more fair and equitable and considerate to what these stories are, right? And who these people are, in ways that white and mainstream media typically don't, because A, they don't have the lens or the care.
Right.
Right. And so then when we see this kind of story come in, I hadn't even really thought about the Love Muffins piece, right? Like the, hey, Love Muffin, sad news piece, because like, I'm so used to seeing that. But I think, Jasmine, you bringing that up is like, it's such an important element of it, right? Because like, you know, lovebscott.com is good for a say what kind of headline, which is like a signature for them, right? And I always enjoy it. It's always like funny. And it's like, say what? So-and-so had did. What's the name? And so those elements of being a journalist, of being Black, and then being a Black journalist make this feel a little bit more murky. And I think it also, and I know that it's also a part of why for Black folks who are in the industry, but also just Black folks who are seeing the story, this hit a little bit different than had it been TMZ that was reporting the story, you know, in the way that this, that LoveBScott.com published this story. And I should say, like, all of us on this show know B and Denver over at LoveBScott.com. We have relationships with these people. Like, we're not, I'm not close with them, but like we know each other or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's hard to talk about it in a way that is like, it's hard to talk about it because these are people that we know and are have some level of community with.
But the question is, right, should we be holding bloggers, writers to the same journalistic standards that we hold ourselves? And I think that's up for debate. I don't know.
I think that we have identified the different levels, right? There's different levels to this media world. And so I think everyone has realized that there's bloggers, there's journalists, there's hosts. You know, we know that there's different levels, but I think each should still be responsible and respectful when they are reporting, because they're still reporting, right? I think it's interesting that we're having this conversation a day after Tasha K was just found guilty of libel, right? She now owes Cardi B $1.25 million plus an additional $250 in medical expenses. And that, I think, is going to be an interesting trend now. Celebrities may turn around and sue your ass for writing things that are not true and also slanderous. And so while I would say that this is not false information, nor is it slanderous, I just think that bloggers now may need to start paying attention to the fact that you just cannot click carelessly post things under, ooh, we got the tea, or we heard from so-and-so's cousin kind of a situation, because you could end up in the courts having to pay somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I think what's important in this situation as well is you were talking about the distinction between journalist and blogger and host and what have you. And Travelle and I were talking about this on Saturday. And I think that part of the concern with that is we are the only people who are concerned about that, right? Like, there's a media literacy that doesn't really extend past most people that work in journalism or media to some degree, right? My mom or, you know, my next door neighbor or whomever isn't going to be making the same distinction between, oh, this came from a news site, this came from a blogger site, this came from, you know, whatever, wherever else. And like, I don't know that it's our responsibility to always like require that of people, but like people are just seeing like news is being reported, right? And so like it's frustrating because it's like they're not being held to the same standard, but they're still getting the same amount of platform and voice.
You'd be surprised the number of people going back to the Cardi Tasha situation, when I saw a number of the posts that went up on Instagram, the comments were flooded with people saying, using the term blogger, that's because she a blogger, she's not a journalist, or, you know. So people, I feel like they get that there is a difference, and they know that she is not an actual journalist, and they know that the distinction between the two. That doesn't mean that they're not going to go and consume her content, but I do think that people know the difference. And they're quick to point that out when it's time to shade you. And I saw the same thing when it came to B. Scott, that people threw that word on him. Like, oh, bloggers, y'all stay doing this disrespectful stuff. Like, people kept using that word. So I think they know the difference. It's just about now, do they know as bloggers that there needs to still be a level of decorum when it comes to the way in which they report? And so.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I don't know. So then let's nail down on the TMZ of it all, right? Because that was one of the retorts that, you know, the folks over at LoveBScott.com had when folks were like offering their criticisms, saying that like, y'all don't say this about TMZ. And Jared, you mentioned how perhaps the reputation of TMZ, particularly around celebrity news, around celebrity deaths, has changed since Michael Jackson's death, right? But like, I But I'm also wondering, like, why... I kind of hear and understand the response that, like, y'all don't say this about TMZ, and we doing the exact same thing. Like, right? Because TMZ is a, I think B. Scott them would say, right? TMZ is a direct competitor in what they're doing. B. Scott is more Black, right? Of course. But, like, what I do know for sure is that last week when Andre Leon Talley died, TMZ was the first one to report it, and they did not have any sourcing.
I want to just say, like, I, one of the things that I do firmly take exception with is this, right? Like, we do say this about TMZ all the time, right? Like, people talk about TMZ being trash and the way that they talk about things, the way that they report things, the way that they run up on people on the sidewalk and in the airport and at their mama's house and stuff like that. Like, we talk about TMZ all the time. But to the point that I believe that Denver and B. Scott were making in their, you know, feedback to folks on Twitter, I think we do hold Black folks to a different standard that may or may not be fair. I don't know that it's fair, but, well, because, like, because Jasmine talked about, like, the responsibility, right? And we've talked about on this show before that I have a hard time with the concept of what someone's responsibility is, because I think responsibility is something that you take on and not something that's given to you. And I don't know how Denver, how B, how, like, a lot of, like, blogging community, how they see the responsibility of their reporting, of the way that they tell their stories. And, like, if they don't see it the same, I don't know that I can hold them to a standard that, you know, I hold to CNN or to Entertainment Tonight or to Access or E or whatever, where, you know, it's considered more journalism and falls under an entertainment news kind of standard. If that's not how they view themselves, then I can't expect them to be holding themselves to X standard. That just doesn't necessarily pan out.
So, a couple of things that I gather from the, from what you said. It's very interesting because it feels as though they operate like a tabloid, right? And TMZ... I would never use the word blog with TMZ. I would use the word tabloid. They operate like the Sun, yeah, and, you know, like old school tabloids did, running up on people, all of the paparazzi, the way in which,
that's
and
a great
I feel
point.
Like blogs oftentimes follow that model. They operate like a tabloid. So they don't necessarily always feel like their information has to be 100% true. It just has to be 50% true. And I think that when that happens, you find yourself in instances where people don't think you're as credible, not because you're Black, but just because of the way in which you've... Media Takeout, for instance, also reminds me of someone that constantly puts out information. Some of it's true, some of it's not true, but they operate like a tabloid. And so I feel like when you operate in that manner, it kind of... your credibility takes a hit, is all I'm saying.
But Jasmine, I think what you said, though, I want to push back a little bit, because I do think that being Black does make people less credible to certain people, right? I think that when it is a Black outlet, when it's a Black news organization, when it's a Black something, people do treat it with less credibility and less respect. And I mean, we see that in advertising dollars, we see that in viewership, we see that in the discourse that follows them. But like, so it's hard, and I get what you're saying, so I'm not like fully disagreeing, but like, I think that because it is a Black outlet that is run by Black people and, you know, often talks about Blackness, I think that the standard and expectation is different, but also I think that the way that it is regarded and treated gets different, and I don't think that is fair. But it's like also, you know, common, right? Like, we see that across every different thing.
One of the other things that people had an issue with was the word exclusive being in the headline. I think, to your point, yeah, Jasmine, that is one of the things that for a lot of folks felt a little clickbaity, felt a little tabloid-ish, felt a little lack of compassion, right, to folks. Okay, so my feelings are a little mixed on this because I get and understand and don't necessarily disagree with that critique. However, I also recognize the ways that, like, if I am running my own independent news site and time again, I see that when I put exclusive in a headline for exclusive news that I have, the engagement drastically goes up, right? And so I could see, if I were running a site like that, if I was that editor, I could see why I might put exclusive in the headline. I could see it. I'm not saying I would, because Jasmine is about to rip my head off, but I could see it. I'm just saying I could see it, you know, just considering the broader landscape and space as an independent Black blog, tabloid, whatever we're going to call them. Go, Jasmine.
I was
going to
say, Jasmine, you want to go or do you want me to give you a moment?
Go ahead.
So here's my thing, and I think this kind of reaches back to something Jasmine was touching on earlier, is like the responsibility element of it and like the and how we are treating these different outlets. Because this exclusive part of the headline definitely was the first thing that made me go, oof, yikes. Right? It wasn't like a, oh, hell no, but it was definitely like, that didn't taste good. But it also makes me think, like, as a person coming from, like, the hard news side, the way that we see cable news run a breaking news banner for things that just sit on TV all day. And it's like, okay, this is not breaking news. It happened a day and a half ago, mm-hmm. right? Or, like, I'm seeing a push alert that Nancy Pelosi is running for re-election. And it's like, is that a breaking headline? Like, I don't know that it is, right? Yeah. And similarly, I mean, it is for the state of California, maybe, or for Democrats or whatever. But, like, the way that that kind of irresponsibly gets used is really frustrating to me. And so I think it's very, it's analogous to the breaking news thing, right? The way that we kind of use things to get people's attention because we know in broadcast that people are going to stop and look when they see a breaking news headline on television. The mm-hmm. same way when you see exclusive in your feed, you're going to pay a little bit more attention, which is why TMZ uses that exclusive word so much in their headlines or in their graphics, because they know people are going to pay more attention. Jasmine,
is there
I see
a different,
you look
I just
like
want to say,
ready.
Add this to your thoughts, Jasmine. Is there a would it this have been better if they had used
I was gonna,
breaking
that,
news
that was
as
my
opposed
point.
To
ex- so by definition, okay. and mm-hmm. we all know this. I'm not schooling you guys, but we and ex- so I'm not mad at them using the word exclusive because they did right. They had an exclusive, mm-hmm. but if you've got an exclusive, the way that my journalism education worked, mm-hmm. you'd have mm-hmm. more to deliver in this story. Yeah. You have a quote, and so my. I had a hard time with this one. It would have been better if they had to use the word breaking. It is breaking news, right? Mm-hmm. Boom. You put it up. Mm-hmm. You put it up that fast. It would have made it easier for me to connect the dots about why you did the things that you did in terms of the way you reported it. Like, we're quickly putting it up. It's breaking. More to come. Story developing, right? To do exclusive means you've got all this information, but then you gave me four sentences. So that's my feeling about the difference between the two. I also feel mm-hmm. like just because someone isn't a blogger doesn't mean that they're not educated. And I feel like even True. Though you decided to go the blogger route and not a journalist route, I'm assuming in 2022 at this point in the game, you probably still went to college and took some English and writing courses. And so there's still a way that you should put together a story that I'm sure you learned in at least one of your classes.
See, I'm not assuming that at all. I want to be clear. I'm not talking about B-Sky or Denver, right? I'm talking about blogging in general. Right. I'm not talking about them specifically. That's not a read. But like, I don't assume those things about anybody. Like, I don't even assume those things about like, I don't assume those things about people that we really respect all the time, right? Because there are some folks whose names I wouldn't name that we are all familiar with within our Black journalist community that I would be like, I don't know what bruh has. No shade, no tea. It is what it is.
Yeah, and I feel like sometimes we'll relegate bloggers like, oh, they're just a blogger, like they're in kindergarten. Like, no, these are educated adults who are behind these computers writing these stories. And so I guess my expectation is at least that they can write, speak, spell, and put up a story and at least give you a cohesive, you know, fully fleshed out, you know, piece of reporting, even mm-hmm. if it doesn't follow all the checks yeah. and balances of an LA Times, right? Like, I think that's the least I look for when I look at a story. And so I felt like there was just mm-hmm. things in this that were, that's why I keep going back to this word careless, that I felt like whoever wrote this just wasn't trying to do better yeah. with this particular one. And this was the worst time to put this out with someone like Regina, because right. you're going to get dragged with a Regina King. Like, there's certain people. My last point is also, and I think I saw people talk about this, and this also happened with John Singleton. At what point, as journalists, hosts, bloggers, do we stop and go, let's let the family go ahead and tell this one? I think that was also something that I felt about this, was that this is so devastating for Regina, I'm sure. Let's let her tell it, you know? Like, so to put it out there in this manner, even if you heard from somebody in her camp, I just thought,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's another question. Yeah. I think the pushback
on that would probably end up being, okay, well, if we're going to take the route of, well, let's let Regina tell it. I mean, 8 other websites had it the next morning, right? And we could have been first, but we didn't. And it's like, then it's like an ethics question or a morality question or whatever, right? And like, oh, well, we could have had that story yesterday, but we took the opportunity to let the family do it or whatever. I could see that being the pushback. Like, other people were reporting it almost immediately after we were.
Well, this brings us to the one thing that we haven't really spoken about is like the motivations, like the audience engagement, click motivation, right, of an exclusive, of a, I heard this thing from somebody who I think is credible and I'm going to put up 4 sentences, right? Like, I don't bring this up to, you know, rouse up the anti-capitalist girls, but they are running a business, right? And guess what? Somebody was going to run the story first, with or without Regina or her team, like, having a formal statement, right? Somebody was going to run it as soon as they got confirmation, right? Whether it was, because again, at the LA Times, we'll call the coroner, we'll call the medical examiner, we'll call the ambulance driver if we can, right? We're going to figure out a way, with or without, you know, having some sort of formal statement. So I hear that and I say, I hear what you say in terms of, like, you know, maybe we should have, like, let the family do it. And I'm like, well, that's not a good business strategy.
Or get the statement. How hard was it to get the statement if you got the information from someone in her camp? Because literally, I'll tell you how fast this happened. Mm-hmm. I'm on a group thread with some other journalist. They send the B. Scott thing. I look at it and I'm like, we all kind of say, everybody on that phone did this. Mm-hmm. Somebody text Regina's rep. It's not, at this point in the game, I sent it to Kevin Frazier, my boss. What did Kevin say? Hold on. Let me hit up her rep.
Yep.
43 seconds later, I got an alert. People Magazine has a statement. They were probably already in the midst of, you know, preparing something. So could he have waited 43 more seconds to get the statement?
So I think that the last question I would love to bring up here, because this has been something that's been on my mind and really kind of like the root of this conversation, because this is not necessarily to me just about B. Scott in Denver and you know, this specific blog or anything like that. But to me, the question has been, as president of NABJLA, right, where I'm tasked with representing journalists, comms professionals, educators, and students, the reason that this has been such a question for me of like where the B. Scotts of the world, more as an archetype as opposed to, like, you know, specifics, do they fall under the purview of what I'm supposed to be like supporting and defending and advocating for? Because part of me kind of feels like I am, right? And I don't feel comfortable with the idea of like, oh, I don't represent them, because these are Black folks in media who are doing entertainment news and reporting or posts or however you want to look at it. And so the line to me for where gossip blogging becomes entertainment journalism, really often for folks, journalism is about like the ethics, right? The ethic code that we're all supposed to live up to. And like, if I've been confused about this one for a long time and I don't know where I fall on it. And I'm curious about what you all think about it.
As the Harriet Tubman of the media world,
I'm gonna leave. We thank Jasmine Simpkins for joining us. We so appreciate it.
Come on, Harriet.
to freedom! Like, what?
I said that with a straight face and hoping that you guys weren't going to laugh, because I mean this. I feel like I've been trying to bring all of everybody. Come on, we can all make it to the promised land. You know, having these conversations, Travelle, you know this, having these conversations with studios and with the agencies about embracing Black media, making sure we get a spot. And I never leave anybody out. I'm not saying, oh, I just want this outlet, the journalist. No, I'm always trying to be inclusive of everybody. But sometimes when you're being inclusive of everybody, they're paying attention to everybody's post and site, and everybody's not the same. And so Kevin will say sometimes, all media ain't good media, Jasmine. Well. And he and I have had this similar conversation, but I'm like, well, we all Black. Like, we all Black media. And I get that I'm a journalist and someone else is a blogger, but I, Jared, have had that same thought. And I still feel like I still want to pull all my brothers and sisters, and we can all have a spot on that carpet, and we can all not be at the end in the Rosa Parks section, no matter what you're doing. But don't you act a fool when you get on this carpet. Don't you be asking people for drops and selfies. You better ask a smart question or get on Twitter and say something about you.
But see, this is it, because I feel the same way. Like, I do feel, and one of the things that I tried to do when I was president of NABJLA was have a more expansive definition of, like, the types of folks that we should be bringing under our auspices, because I do believe that bloggers and folks who just consider themselves to be writers should be holding themselves to a similar standard of ethics that we as journalists hold ourselves to, because of that media literacy point that you made, Jared. Because to your point, Jasmine, while yes, I do think there's a lot of people who make a difference between a blogger and a journalist, I also think there are people who are just like, this is a news site. Your little banner says celebrity news site. So they see it and they take it and they interpret it in that way. And so I think, Jared, that we as NABJ, both on the local level and nationally, should be doing more for these folks, especially because it is the blogosphere now that ends up being those initial clips that entertainment, like folks who are interested in entertainment journalism or, you know, reporting or hosting or whatever, actually get, right? Because the LA Times ain't hiring them like that, right? The New York Times ain't hiring them like that. And so, like, I think we have to, like, augment and switch the conversation a little bit and bring those people into our meetings, into our conversations, so that they can develop this different sense of ethics or concern or compassion that we might have. And the last thing I'll just say in this conversation is I also want to recognize the fact that, you know, I do think that we... as a community are feeling this type of way, specifically about this situation with lovebscott.com, because it's Regina King, this Black icon, and because it's a Black publication. So I do think that we feel as if they should be held to a different standard, and that there should be some sort of care or compassion present that is not often exhibited in these white publications. And I do think that that is a double standard and problematic.
I'm going to push back and say that I think that the number one, my gut tells me I feel like we should be advocating and defending and uplifting them as well. I'm going to push back on y'all's idea that we should be holding them to a higher standard, or that we should bring them in and change the stand, or like bring them up to a certain standard, or, you know, make them do whatever, however we want to word that. I don't think that's fair. Because I think that if we're going to bring them in and ask them to be at X standard, then they should be called journalists. And I know that that if we were, I'm so black and churchy, sorry. But like, if Where's we were fan? To, listen, right? But if we were to, I mean, let's just put this in a hypothetical situation where we bring in lovebeastgod.com and The Shade Room and Gossip on This and everybody else, right? And said to them, okay, we will defend you and advocate for you and, you know, all of the other things for you, but you have to be at this standard. You have to, this is the ethical code. This is the blah, 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 blah. There are still going to be, they're still going to get pushback about whether or not they're journalists. And I don't think that would be fair to them. And two, I don't know that we should be expecting them to be at a standard that we have for ourselves in the same way that we, I had a friend who was talking about a celebrity and was like, oh, that person would never make it in high fashion. And I was like, who said that that was their goal? Right?
Okay,
who said that
on.
Their goal was to be represented in this place? Or who said that their goal was to be looked at in XYZ, you know, group of people? I don't know that that's fair.
So I don't think that they should be held to the same standard as, you know, a New York Times or an LA Times, right? Because as Jasmine mentioned earlier, the levels of verification that we go through as journalists is different. And I think that that is one of the factors that changes things. But I do think that it is okay to say that you need to have a confirmation. Like, you don't need to just go off of, you know, hearsay, right? It needs to be somebody who can confirm.
You need to have a confirmation to what?
You need to have a confirmation for anything. Like, don't just go out, because the Tasha K situation,
I'm saying,
you can't just go out singing shit.
Or what?
Or you will get sued and you will have to pay however many million dollars.
What I'm saying is, we're going to say to them, and we're way over time here, but if we're going to say to them, you have to do this or what, you're going to get sued. That's not like whether or not they're a journalist or whether or not they're valid or whatever. They'll have to pay it or they won't.
That's why I'm saying.
But like hold on. The idea that they have to come up to some standard or else something, like that doesn't make them journalist or not, or blogger or not, or host or not, or ethical or not, right? Like they are up, they're holding up to whatever their own personal standard is.
Sure. Yes. The problem is, if you don't want to get sued, and this has always been the thing, right? But now, and we see more and more with this conservative court. There's Sarah Palin's little lawsuit that she has against the New York Times right now, right? Because of the New York Times saying that there was some sort of connection between stuff that she was doing and Gabby Giffords getting shot, right? And she's now suing the New York Times, and the likelihood of what might happen there, because we now have a conservative court, right? The ways that Donald Trump has said, right, and attempted to legislate against the media and all these other ways in terms of this quote-unquote ethics conversation, right, and intention. These blogs are going to have to step their cookies up in some way, shape, or form, right? And I'm not saying that it maybe needs to be on the same quote-unquote level as journalists, but I do think that those businesses have to have conversations with themselves to ensure that they're doing what they can do to not get in trouble. And that's a separate conversation, to your point, Jared, from the journalist versus blogger thing. I'm just trying to make sure y'all can keep y'all job. Go ahead, Jasmine. You be the last.
Jasmine, get the last word.
And mine will be quick. I was just going to say, you said, or what? Or you won't get the respect. I think that's really what it boils down to. I mean, I think that they will continue to be relegated as just some, you know, blog or tabloid or this or that until they rise to the occasion of doing proper journalism. And I think that really is just what it boils down to. You don't have to, but if you don't, people aren't going to respect you. And I still ain't got no respect for TMZ. And it wasn't because of Michael Jackson. After they said Lil Wayne was dead and the man wasn't, I was done with them.
Jasmine, tell people where they can find you and follow your work.
Jasmine A. Simpkins on Instagram. I'm on KTLA every night at 7 p.m. on a show called LA Unscripted. And you can find me every morning on hiphollywood.com and on Hip Hollywood on Instagram, giving you all the tea and the daily hype. But it is all credible and has all.
She's a reporter, honey. She's a journalist, darling.
Yes, darling.
Wow, what a conversation. We have gone way too long on this. We want to hear from y'all, though. Hit us up on social media telling us what y'all think using the hashtag FantiFam. You can hit us on Twitter and Instagram at FantiPodcast. We've run way past listener feedback time, so we'll push y'all to the next week. You'll be fine. We're going to get into dishonorable mentions next.
Hey there, I'm Ellen Weatherford.
And I'm Christian Weatherford.
And we've got big feelings about animals that we just gotta share.
On Just the Zoo of Us, your new favorite animal review podcast, we're here to critically evaluate how each animal excels and how it doesn't, rating them out of 10 on their effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics.
Guest experts give you their takes informed by actual, real-life experiences studying and working with very cool animals like sharks, cheetahs, and sea turtles.
It's a field trip to the zoo for your ears.
So if you or your kids have ever wondered if a pigeon can count, why sloths move so slow, or how a spider sees the world, find out with us every Wednesday on Just the Zoo of Us in its natural habitat on MaximumFun.org.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is a podcast.
Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
That thing is not my daughter. And I want you to tell me there's a show where the hosts don't just report on fringe science and spirituality, but take part themselves.
Well, there is, and it's Ono, Ross, and Carrie on Maximum Fun.
This year, we actually became certified exorcists.
So yes, Carrie and I can help your daughter.
Or we can just talk about it on the show.
Ono, Ross, and Carrie on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Fanti. Now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the people or stories that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or for their stupid. I'm giving shout outs to two Black folks who have something coming out. Number one, Michelle Buteau. I talked about Michelle Buteau's special, having watched it over the Christmas break. Welcome to Butopia, I believe is what it was called. Well, her book, Survival of the Thickest, is becoming a television series over at Netflix. That was just announced today or yesterday, and really, really excited for her. I think Michelle Buteau is just hilarious, and I just really, really enjoy her. So make sure to check that out when it comes out. I'm assuming probably later on this year or next. Also want to shout out Clay Kane. He has a second book that's going to be called The Grift, Black Republicans from the Party of Lincoln to the Party of Trump. That book is coming out, and Clay Kane, you might know from Urban View over on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. He hosts a show daily there, The Clay Kane Show, and is a friend of mine, and I'm really, really excited for him. Listen, writing a book is not easy, and it's a lot of work. And so really excited for Clay and his new book.
For me, I just have two TV show recommendations for you folks. First and foremost, you need to check out Abbott Elementary. It is a fabulous comedy. I think we might have mentioned it on the show before. I think we mentioned it after the first like episode preview came out late last year. But it is so good, so funny, so wonderful. Shout out to Quinta Brunson. And then another show, this one's on Apple TV called Swagger. It apparently is based on like the life story of one of those sports people by the name of Kevin Durant, I believe, who serves as an executive producer. So it's about a prodigy basketball child. And, you know, O'Shea Jackson plays the coach. O'Shea Jackson Jr., excuse me. Ice Cube's son plays the coach. It's really good, really wonderful. The Black woman, whose name I can't remember right now, she plays the child's mother. She's amazing. So make sure y'all check that out, please, and thank you.
Before we go, if this conversation piqued your interest and you want a little bit more of this here,
good.
Check out other episodes that have a related conversation. We did a show called The Newsroom Where It Happens, where we talked about being Black in the newsroom, what it's like to be a Black person and a journalist and doing the work. You might want to go check out that episode because that was also a really good one. We thank you so much for listening. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts specifically, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Let us know what you think about the show. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, if you have ideas or feelings or whatever it is. You can hit us on Instagram and Twitter at FantiPodcast using the hashtag FantiFam, or you can shoot us an email at Fanti@MaximumFun.org. We want to let you know we have Fanti Fridays coming up tomorrow. That is going, if you're listening to this episode on Thursday, tomorrow at noon, for all of the people who are financially contributing members of the Fanti Fam, you can check out Travell and I live from Los Angeles. We're going to be talking to you about this episode and all of the episodes that we've had previously, and just kind of getting your feedback. It will be on the 28th.
So very you can go outro.
To Maximum Fun. Are you okay?
Oh, go to MaximumFun.org/join to become a Fanti Fam member and help us pay, you know, bam, help us pay some bills over here. All right. Our music is brought to you, as always, by the one and only Corice. That's C-O-R.E-C-E, wherever you get Slayworthy Audio. He's got a new single out right now that's doing things on the charts, apparently. And our graphics are brought to you by Ashley Wen and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative.
Our producer this week is Laura Swisher. And our editor is Will Hagel. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
You've never seen Xenon.
I didn't. Isn't that one of your Disney Channel shows?
You've never seen Xenon. You did not know that Disney Channel original movies are called Xenon.
That is not about generation. Okay? It is about
socioeconomics. So 5 years is a big difference.
Okay. I did not have the Disney Channel when I was a kid. Thank you. So don't try it.